Welcome to the Property Lovers Podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Grubisher. This podcast series is all about giving you a competitive edge in your property journey. We'll be discussing little known strategies, tools, and information to help you add value and create wealth through property. Now, obviously, we don't know you or your unique position, so this is not financial or investment advice. It is information of a general nature, and you should always seek professional advice as to your situation before you ever invest in anything. But if you want to play a bigger game in property and want to use property as your vehicle to create wealth and, more importantly, freedom, then you're in the right place. Let's do this. Let's get started. In this podcast episode, we're going to look at a really popular, what I'm calling a revolution, a rooming house revolution. We all know that we have massive problems with a rental crisis. We have so many migrants coming into the country now, whether they be students, skilled migrant workers, because borders have been opened post-COVID, and we've got that influx of population. And with recent developments, with construction costs going through the roof, inflation, construction companies collapsing, people generally scared and uncertain, we have a shortage of housing supply. So what that has meant is that rents have gone through the roof and there is literally no place to house all these people. Supply is not enough to meet the demand, which is great in a marketplace when you're the one who can provide the solution to feed that hungry market that is demanding more affordable housing. So it's an affordable housing initiative, and it's different in each state, but each state has similar rules. And what they've done is they've said in a low density area, we want to get more people in. So imagine a low density area is just one where I can build suburban houses. Now, a suburban house takes up a lot of land and it houses one person or one family technically. So if I want to have more people in a dwelling, or I want to strata it or build townhouses or have higher density, I've got to go to a medium or high density zoned area. And they're fewer, further between, cost a lot because of the development potential. So if I had 1,000 square meters where you could put apartments, because it was zoned for apartments, it's going to be worth a lot more as land than 1,000 square meters where you can build one house. But here's the thing, with rooming houses, you can, in a low density area, take an existing property and renovate or transform it to take multiple tenants. So forget about old boarding houses. We're talking a new, what they're calling a new generation rooming house, which is co-living arrangements. So it can be an existing home in a suburban area. It can be a land in a suburban area or a knockdown and a purpose built to rent construction. So from the outside, all you're going to see what it looks like is just your normal family home. Doesn't interfere with the streetscape. You're not building high-rise apartments in a family area. It's a low-density area. But what you are building, and it's different in each state and local council, but you are building a normal home that can house four, three, up to 10 in some states, separate tenancies. So what that means is that 10 separate people can, depending on the council and the compliance, can technically live under the one roof on, for example, 5 or 10 separate leases. That means as a landlord, you are 3xing at least, 5xing, sometimes 10xing your rental cash flow. So whereas a suburban house may rent out for $800 a week, the same property configured as a rooming house could bring you in $1,500, $2,000 a week. You can see where we're going here. So huge for cash flow, and investors are going to pay more, aren't they? If you were a buy and hold investor, wouldn't you rather buy a business in a box, a managed rooming house that's full, and they are often full. One tenant leaves, and next one is clambering to get in. They're not just transient fly-by-night nomads. They are usually young professionals wanting to be near their work, often doctors, nurses, wanting to be near hospitals for working situations, or students. But they are wanting it. In fact, the rules are that it can't be less than 3 months lease. So it's like a normal lease in that respect. It's not an Airbnb or holiday let. It is a longer term lease. And what happens are many of the managers of these co-living arrangements will guarantee your rent as well. So, absolute game changer when it comes to cash flow, or configuring it to flip for profit to an investor who will pay a lot more for it, like they would for a business, because of the income that it's generating. Now, there are a few rules and regulations at a state government level and even at local government levels, but there are also some advantages. So, for example, big tax depreciations, because often they're furnished and they're new and there's a lot to write off. And secondly, there are density bonuses. So a density bonus means that if you could build on 400 square meters of the block, they'll allow a 10% bonus at council. So you can build on 440 square meters because you're providing affordable housing and filling a need in the market and easing that rental crisis there. So you are providing value, which is what entrepreneurs do. You want a hungry market and you want to be able to solve the problems that that market is facing. And rooming houses do exactly that right now. So we thought we'd connect with a member of our property lovers community who has been in the boarding house and a rooming house business for a very long time, watched it evolve over time, and is using it not just for generational wealth and to leave a legacy, but to help his own children get up on the property ladder to be able to live, to not throw away money on rent, and to be able to generate rental income from the place they're living in to pay down their mortgage. So a great solution for young people and first home buyers as well. So welcome, Bob, and thank you so much for sharing all your wealth of experience when it comes to rooming houses. Bob, what was your big why? Like, what was driving you, and what made you? What was the catalyst for taking this property route that you're doing?
I've got a I've got five kids, but my youngest son doesn't have a particularly high paying job, and he was actually renting. His rent went up 25% last year, and
in Sydney,
yeah. And look, I decided I put to him that I've been running share houses for years. And I said, look, if you're open to basically adopting some of the experience I've got with share houses and taking in some tenants, some boarders, I'll help you out financially with finding a property and get you out of this rental cycle. So he was open to that. And we had a conversation because he wanted to buy an apartment. I hate apartments. I just hate them as an investment. So anyway, he went along with it. It took a while for him to adjust his mindset to it, but once he actually looked at the numbers and he decided to embrace it. So then we started to search for a property that would be suitable.
Okay, all right. So yeah, so it was a family-driven reason, and you wanted to teach a man to fish, and yep. To a legacy for him.
Yeah, I want to make him independent so that he didn't have to be constantly on my mind. Like from my point of view, as any parent does, you want your kids to be independent, right? So in Sydney, it's tough. It's really tough for young people. So I thought, well, here's an opportunity. If you've got the right headspace, I could make you financially independent if you're prepared to be open to suggestions.
Awesome. So yeah, share with us this one. 3x2x2. So 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, 2-car space townhouse, yep. That was 22 years old in Sydney.
Yep. Out of Western Sydney. He identified the suburb. He's been watching what I've been doing for years. And he basically identified the St. Mary's area, actually, because he saw that as being a key hub suburb of the Badgerys Creek development. And you can see that 10 to 20 years down the track, it's going to be a fairly vibrant sort of area feeding the Badgerys Creek development. So he specifically wanted there. He actually works at Wetherill Park. So it's only about 20 minutes from where he works. And so we started looking at, there's not an area that I particularly had any interest in up until he actually nominated it. We looked at about 20 or 25 townhouses to see what was out there. And the model that we were looking for was something that was going to be adaptable to having a share house facility where he could live there and have some tenants come in that would actually help him pay the mortgages. So he had a capacity of about $380,000, $400,000 in borrowings. I was basically going to top up the rest of it. But every dollar I'm putting in, he had to pay the interest on, all right? So it had to be financially robust. It wasn't a gift. It was an investment, and he had to be able to fund the whole lot. So at the price point we were looking for, every time he went up another 100,000, he had to find another capacity for another border, all right? So that was kind of the way the numbers worked. So we looked around about 20 or 25 townhouses, and there was this particular one that stood out as being the right one that had the right kind of characteristics. Because when I'm looking for a share house, because I've been doing it for a while, I'm looking for properties that have been neglected. I'm looking for properties that need renovation. Because when you actually set up a share house, there are certain things you've got to do in order to be able to make it livable for multiple adults. And some of them, for example, are things like insulating in between the bedroom walls so that you haven't got sound transmission happening. You've got more facilities than like vanity areas or bathrooms and so on that you would normally have in a normal house, things like that. So if you're not, if you're going to go into a new home, for example, they generally aren't configured for a share house. So you want something that's open for renovation.
Sorry, I should say, Bob, just for those who don't know, so share housing is like a new affordable housing initiative. It's like people have always had share, like student accommodation. They've always like shared and pitched in for the rent. But co-living arrangements are where you have, for example, four separate tenancies, and it's a bit like owning four studio apartments, and especially it only came in formally in July last year, at least in New South Wales. But so Bob, you knew what you needed to do to be able to make them all self-contained.
Look, I've been running boarding houses for 30 years previously, and my grandmother had her own boarding house in her own home when like 50, 60 years ago, right? So it's not new. It's just that people have become aware that it's actually a way to get into the housing market. So it's been around for decades and decades and decades, but people have been asleep to it, frankly.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Bob. So later on, I'm going to do a bonus session today where I talk about the laws, the new generation boarding houses, they call them under the law. And it's now like they co-living arrangements. There's lots of government initiatives behind it, like more density bonuses and everything. Bob, this you're the master of this now. We're looking at now a slide that's the existing layout of the townhouse as you bought it?
Yeah. So you'll see in this particular, it was a 22-year-old townhouse. Now, one of the things about old townhouses is that they tend to be more generous with their space. New townhouses, they're squeezing every square meter out of it. So this particular townhouse is 22 years old. It had 2.7 meter ceilings throughout, which is an appealing situation when you've got multiple people living in a home. It just feels more open, more comfortable. And you'll notice in the layout that up in where it's got the three bedrooms, the family area is relatively useless. It doesn't get used. It's more like a large corridor, frankly. So we made some changes to that. So that was the first thing we identified, the fact that they had a room there that was essentially locked off and they had a large bathroom. So one of the things we're looking for when you want a share house is you want to be able to have more bathing facilities than what you would have in a normal house. For example, I've got a share house up in Brisbane, and I basically put in a vanity area into every room because it's a female-only rooming house. And essentially, when you've got ladies and bathrooms, there tends to be a bit of an overabundance of time women spend in bathrooms. So what we did with this particular one is we moved the master bedroom door up to that slide, slightly shifted, but the door was basically moved up. So we created bedroom four. We moved the bar. That, for some reason, your graphs have just moved a bit from the one I gave you. But
sorry. That's
all right. That's okay. Me. That's okay. Yeah. Something moved there. So if you have a look at that one there, you'll see that we've split the wardrobes in between the two rooms. So we moved bedroom three, moved the wall where the old wardrobe was to make bedroom three bigger, which enabled us to put an ensuite into the bathroom. So we made the main bathroom.
Is this one better? I didn't move this one.
Yep.
Does that show it better?
It shows it a little bit better. It's a bit distorted for some reason. I don't know why. Let me just see if I
didn't touch that one, Bob. I'm below the line here. I didn't touch that one. I didn't change it. It must be the slides. But
okay.
Yeah. So high level though, you're making a adding a bathroom.
Yeah. So we're adding a bathroom, adding a bedroom. So we're changing a 3-2-2 into a 4-3-2.
Okay. Right. And if we look at the numbers on that, just talk us through your numbers. You bought it for $670.
Yeah, so a little bit about the acquisition. Basically, we looked around at all these townhouses and we couldn't find one that really, I like things like it's got to be close to transport, got to be close to shops, it's got to be reasonably easy to park in the area. There's a whole bunch of things I'm looking for. I'm looking for uplift in value. I'm looking for neglected properties. The one I bought in Brisbane was a deceased estate. It was a terrible state. This one is an older lady who was moving into a retirement village. And we had a bit of a hassle with the kids. The kids were arguing with the agent that it was worth over $700,000. We got to $660 and said, look, we're done. We're not going any further. And we actually walked away from it. So we actually gave up on finding a property after going through 25 of them. This was the only one that spoke to us. So we basically walked away from it. 4 weeks later, he rang us up and said, hey, are you open to actually talking about it around 670? So we looked at it again and said, okay, we'll do 670 and we took the property. But we literally walked away from it when we gave up on it because they were just being too greedy over it. Anyway, we did the deal at 670. Because it was a first home buyer, there was no major stamp duty, about $4,000 in stamp duty on it. So $8,000 to actually do the transaction. If we just done a cosmetic reno and just fixed it up and not worried about the share house thing, it would have been about $50,000 to actually completely cosmetically renovate the existing floor plan. But because we're doing a share house, we spent an extra $30,000 putting in the extra ensuite and rearranging things. There's a number of things you have to do with a share house in order to make it work. So we're working to a budget of about $758,000. To get this job complete. And we're on track at the moment.
Awesome. And if we just look at the numbers then, the difference and the benefit of share housing for you and your end game. So success for you was helping your son to get into the property market and to stop paying rent that went up 25%.
Yep.
It was that you're renting out each room separately, as we see there.
Yeah, so what happens here is that effectively he's getting a return. Once we finish it, he'll get a return of just under 5% on the property whilst he has his accommodation. So if you're an investor, the numbers are obviously different because you're renting out the extra bedroom that he's using. So you'd be getting about a 6.9% return gross, not net. So you're getting about $50,000 a year in rent, $52,000 a year in rent as an investor. But as an owner-occupier, you'll be getting about $37,000 a year in rent. And the way the numbers work out, if you think about interest rates around 5% on $750,000, the gross income that he's enjoying as an owner-occupier is about the same as the interest on the entire mortgage that he's actually funded into the property, including the renovations, which means that he gets... Yeah, so effectively the $30,000 we've spent extra on upgrading it to a share house, he'll get that back within 12 months.
Amazing. And so you're working smarter, not harder. And you've just put in there are a few other things to be aware of, like insurances, the management fees. There's going to be a bit of a differential there, but obviously well worth it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you do, if you're approaching this from an investor, your costs are slightly different. There are different rules around an owner-occupier and a share house and an investor and a share house. So you just need to be aware that you'll need different insurance policies. There are quite unique insurance policies for an investor who's actually doing a share house compared, and that this entails a lot of considerations around fire safety. Now, in this particular development, I'm putting all of the things that would be required for an investor into this property. So even though he doesn't have to do it as an owner-occupier, I'm doing it anyway, just in case he decides to keep this as an investment property down the track. So he may choose to actually keep this property in 10 years' time and basically keep it as an investment property and go and get something else that he lives on his own. So we're setting it up so it can be an investment property in the future.
I love it, Bob. Start with the end in mind. And so many of our students are now looking at this strategy. Obviously, it's become, it's on people's radar a bit more. You've been doing it for a long time. But it's, even if you don't keep it and set it up for a buy and hold and cash flow, there are still investors out there who would love that as a turnkey solution, and it would give them greater yield. It'll be easy for you to sell that as a going concern.
Oh, yeah. Now, one of the things that I do counsel people about, because I often get asked about, oh, how do you manage that? All these people, all these tenants and so on. I personally manage my property. So I've got about 13 tenants. I'll end up with 16 tenants when we this one done. I'll be managing the property, not my son. He'll obviously learn how to do it, but I'll be managing it. Only takes me 1 to 2 hours a week to do the property management. And I would never give it to a property manager. Property managers actually stuff them up, frankly. You are dealing with people who are co-living together. You're not letting it out to a family. So you need to be very conscious of the sort of people you bring in and, the, if you like, the harmony that you're creating within the living space. So I'm very fussy about the people I bring in. We probably have marketed away from 80% of the market. It was only about 10 to 20% of the market we are actually interested in. So it's very important to have a property that's good with transport, good with shops, good economic zone, lots of employment around the area. You've got to have the demographic right to actually make this work. So you're in the driver's seat when it comes to selecting the people you want as a co-living inhabitant. And if you've got that, all of those things lined up, then you've got choice. Then you can actually create quite a harmonious community within those share houses. And I've had no drama at all with the ones that I've been property managing for some years now. But I'm involved in every tenancy. I would never give it to a property manager. Most property managers, by the way, will actually charge you 2 to 3 times the normal rental commission to actually look after a share house because they see them as nothing but problems. But they're only problems because of the manager. They're not problems because of the concept. If you actually know how to manage that, it's not a problem.
Are you west, Bob?
Northwest.
Northwest, Millionaire's Hook. There you go. So after this, Bob, what's next? More rooming houses?
Not necessarily. Look, I'm 75, so I'm basically getting to the stage where I'm really sort of trying to get my kids to the stage where they are independent. So my focus is on helping them be part of the property journey. I've got 5 kids. So anything I can do to actually help them basically take advantage of what I've learned over the years, over the decades, I'm doing that. But I'm probably more focused right now on becoming more of a money partner with people who've got projects, more to sort of appease my wife's concern about me taking on too much. So she gets a bit restless when I get too involved in projects, but I may be looking at some projects after I get this one out of the way. This one's pretty much full on. We gave ourselves 3 months from the time we took the keys to get it done. We're 8 weeks into it now. Eight weeks into it now. We've got 5 weeks to go. And we're pretty much on track to have it completed by the end of May. We literally started work on it the night we got the keys. So literally within 24 hours, we were demolishing and moving walls. And within 3 days, the place looked like a demolition site. But anyway...
You're 75, you're still on the tools renovating, yep. But I think you're also money partnering as well and supporting other people's deals, letting them do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I love property. I've been doing it for decades. I think it's a great way. Look, some of the things you've already talked about this morning, just going out and having a go is probably the biggest single message I would give people. One of the best outcomes I ever got was my first fail. I went and bought a property in Brisbane, which I still own. I bought it 5 years ago, and it was a disaster, a complete disaster. I wanted to get into the residential market up in Brisbane. Bought a property. It was full of asbestos. It was a nightmare. I had to completely strip the property. And when I got the property, I'd never intended to do anything other than just do a cosmetic renovation and rent it. But because it had all of this drama associated with it, I had to find a better way to make it work. And I decided to turn it into a share house, into a rooming house.
There you go. Every problem is an opportunity. And yeah, but for that.
It's been cash flow positive for 5 years, and it's made about $400,000 in capital gain, and it's made money for me all the time. And it was a pure fail, 100% fail. It was
imperfect action and making lemonade from lemons. Well, Bob, thank you so much for sharing. Truly inspiring. If you're wanting to know more about rooming houses and you're wanting to pick the brains of someone like Bob and see other people's experiences in our community who have done just that, we are holding a special rooming house challenge. Our rooming house revolution challenge is going to happen over 5 days next week from the 1st to the 5th of May. So it's an hour a day. That's all we ask, 12:30 to 1:30. We'll step you through where to look, how to find your site. In fact, we're going to give you access to our bespoke software, Fast Property, which is great for council zoning research, blocks, doing your pricing, your due diligence, as well as national property data. Amazing software for you to know what's happening in the market, to choose an area in which to build your rooming house, and to see what the market wants and the demographics in that area, as well as recent sales. So a lot of software and data and machine-driven, almost artificial intelligence learning there that you can really leverage to get there faster, as well as then how to fund your project, the people that you'll need, the team to assemble, how to do it as a renovation, how to get it rented out for cash flow. And then once you've got your formula and your template, how to rinse, repeat. So that's going to happen over 5 days from the 1st to the 5th of May. All we ask is that you show up. We'll provide everything else. That includes the knowledge, the support, the systems, the tools, the software, everything. And we'd ask you to actively participate. So it is going to be an interactive event where you're going to be learning by doing. You'll do it with us, but 5 days to potentially change the course of your life. So if that's for you, you can head over to the comments or the description section, click on the link, get yourself registered for that event. We'll set you up with the software and everything you need, and we will see you at 12:30 Sydney time on Monday, the 1st of May. Can't wait to share. It's going to be an awesome program. If you're enjoying this podcast, don't forget to leave us a review and follow us so that you never ever miss an episode. Here at Property Lovers, we've got a big mission to help people who are serious about property start getting outcomes and profits to match their passion. It's not easy, but it is simple. It will require from you focus, commitment, and action. But over the last decade, supporting property entrepreneurs, we've found that 80% of results come from how you start. You see, you need to get off to a sizzling start. It's all in the launch and the velocity around the start, and the rest is pretty much autopilot if you start right, follow through, and just stay on course. That's why we created our 5-day challenge, to work through a funnel to get your deal. So step one is find the deal, which we set up through artificial intelligence software. So it's made sure that it's for your strategy and desired outcomes, and we do all that and build that together on days 1 and 2. By day 3, you'll have about 100 leads in your hopper, both coming on market and from off market. And you'll be able to consider them. And that's where we move to step 3. And that's where we run them through a feasibility filter. Notice the F theme here, find feasibility. And the next step is to formulate the deal and the offer. That comes on day 4, where we get our offers ready. And next step is we look at ways are finally left to fund them using other people's money, so it's none of your money. So that's 80% of the hard work done then and there. By day 5, you'll be submitting offers. And that's it for the challenge. Then it's over to you to fix up these properties. That's the fifth F, fix, and finally flip them for a quick payday. So if you want to get off to a flying start, you can go to the link in the notes section and sign up for our 5-day property challenge. Just 1 hour a day over 5 days, or all in one session if you're committed, and you'll be off to a start on your property journey with leads, funding, everything you need, and the software at your fingertips. And for any other questions that you might have around property and all your property needs, visit our website, propertylovers.com.au, because we're here to support you on your property journey and give you a real competitive advantage with the right knowledge, support, and systems to achieve your financial goals. That's it for today, but really looking forward to giving you more tools, more strategies, more support, and a competitive advantage when it comes to property in our next episode.